Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to episode 12 of That Android Show, where we talk about the latest and greatest with Android and Google and everything else going on in the world of cool mobile phones. I'm JJ Metal.
I'm Access Anna.
And I'm Steve, the blind geek.
We have a lot to talk about this time. Some new apps from the Ideal Group, new versions of Android coming out. Will they have more accessibility? Some new phones, new tablets perhaps? And of course, your mailbag segments and your iReport. So we'll definitely get to all of that and much more, as well as some awesome app reviews as well. But first, the latest Android news.
Well, the first piece of news is that Android 4.1.2 was just released. The only things I noticed that this release includes is that of particular interest to sighted users, the home screen can now auto-rotate. Before, it was always in portrait orientation. So that's not a problem. Since we usually turn the auto-rotate off, it doesn't really affect us. But I think there's another thing that we should be more excited about, and that is the bug that makes updating TalkBack sometimes tricky because it turns off Explore by Touch. I believe that is corrected. Yes.
So basically, and I was not able to verify this personally, but this is based on the change logs for the latest Android. Not able to totally verify this because I don't have a 4.1.2 device in front of me, but according to the latest change logs, there was a bug for those of you who are tech inclined and have been installing the TalkBack betas, the latest round of TalkBack betas, which we'll talk about a little bit. There was a bug which basically didn't let you install it independently using Android 4.1, which was kind of goofy. You had to somehow enable Explore by Touch, but you couldn't. There was a dialog that popped up and you couldn't actually explore to it and enable it. But there is a workaround now for that, and it seems like that has been fixed. Not much else. I mean, it's a minor update, though, you know.
Yeah, I haven't been able to verify that either, but I did hear about it, yeah.
Yeah, some people saying on the iFree list that it's a little more responsive and things like that, but, you know, those are all sometimes just perceptions, and, you know, I don't know if anything really was done there.
And getting that bug fixed is nice because it you know, if you're not expecting it, it does catch you unaware, and so it's a good thing.
Anything else in the latest TalkBack betas? I know they added the read-to-end continuous reading modes.
It crashes more. Anyone notice that?
You know, I haven't tried the latest.
It seems
beta
to go like in cycles. Some of the betas do really well, and some of them,
six.
You wonder why they released it.
Six is doing what Acapella used to do, and that's where, you know, the phone suddenly freezes for about 30 seconds and then buffers.
Right.
So I don't think it's Acapella's fault that their voices do that. I think it's something in the underlying system or TalkBack itself.
Yeah, and I don't know what's, they fixed some of the web views, but I know there are still some pages, some of the Google Now pages that are still crashing in some areas. Acapella, since our last show, has come quite far. Steve, you introduced us to that last time, and I think since then I know I bought it. I bought a couple voices, and it's gotten a lot more stable. It crashes once in a while for me, but it's quite usable. It's my default voice.
Use it as my default voice because if I go into messaging apps and I've got a long list of messages, it just buffers and crashes all over the place. Mm. So for me, the Acapella has got worse. It's more responsive. It's less stable on my Nexus.
Mine seems to crash once in a while when I open up a couple particular apps. But at least now when it crashes, the Google TTS comes right up. Before, it was crashing and I had nothing. Incidentally, there's a tip on that. If you happen to be using Acapella or iPhone or one of the text-to-speech that's installed on an SD card or external storage, as soon as you plug in your phone to a computer, it's going to default away from that because it won't use your storage gets disabled at that point. So if you're looking for a way to try to get some sort of speech or perhaps, you know, try to see if you know where you're stuck, that's a chance that might work depending on your phone and your setup.
Yeah, the other good tip I heard on the list was from Tabitha, and she said she has Spiel installed, but she doesn't use Spiel. She sets it to shake to wake, so you can shake it to turn it on. So when TalkBack crashes, she shakes the phone, and Spiel comes on, and she can then you know, change to a different speech engine.
Good that idea. Works. It's like it isn't. Is the shaking not sensitive enough to, you know, where it actually doesn't just accidentally turn on all the time? That would be the only thing I would worry about.
But, yeah, that is the only thing. But she says it works pretty well. So it's another idea. You know, just bring in the screen reader while you get the other one back. Yeah,
I'll have to try that. I know I tried that in the past and it didn't work for me. But that was a couple of versions ago, so things may have gotten
Right about the time this episode is coming out, there's another Google event. This might be the bigger news for us. We don't really know yet, but there's a Google event scheduled for October 29th, and allegedly there's been rumors of some new Nexus devices, perhaps Google opening up the Nexus program to more manufacturers. You might have several different choices of new Google branded devices. Also perhaps Android 4.2 also being announced, but we don't know a lot about this. You know, obviously rumors flying around about 4.2, but we don't know a lot yet of what's going to happen at this press event in New York.
Yeah, and the thing about this press event is that it's right now it's something of a mystery, but it's scheduled around the time that Apple is going to be releasing things. So I'm sure that whatever Google has to say will have something competition-wise to do with Apple and maybe even Windows, since the holidays are coming up. And, we're all thinking about what gifts to give each other, and Grandma and Grandpa are going to give gifts to, their teenage grandchildren and so on. So I'm sure there are things in the works.
Wait a minute. My grandparents never bought me tablets and phones when times have changed, I guess. I got a bag of M&Ms. I was happy.
But I used to get dollies. Come on now.
Yeah. Well, my lovely wife has bought me a Nexus 7 for Christmas, but she won't let me have it till Christmas. So isn't that nice?
Good.
Yeah, it'll be out of date by the time you get it, but that's really nice of her.
Of course, absolutely. Yeah, but, nice little tablet.
The Nexus mantra, for those of you who may not be as familiar, basically, these are the Google-branded devices. They get the latest Android updates first. So if you have the money, if when these Nexus phones come out, the Galaxy Nexus currently for AT&T, the unlocked one, the one that comes from Google, if you have the money to get these Nexus devices, they're generally stock Android, latest updates. Accessibility-wise, that's often the way to go. So we'll be definitely interested if they do this for multiple carriers, multiple configurations. It'll be interesting to see what happens here.
And the other tip along those lines is if, you're thinking about going Android with your phone and you haven't quite made up your mind because you don't know if you're going to like the Android experience, getting a Nexus tablet is the way to do it. It's relatively cheap, and but you get the real pure, unadulterated Android.
The latest Android. The Nexus 7, by the way, it looks like they're phasing out the 16-gig model and replacing it with a 32-gig model for the same price. So you can get the 32-gig now for about $250 in U.S. So for those that were complaining about how there's no expandable storage on the Nexus 7, well, that might be,
It's a shame that there's no expandable storage on any Nexus.
It is.
Really?
And hopefully, there's obviously some of these other Jelly Bean tablets that are coming out. You can still pay more for that, but it's really up to what you want.
And another minor bit of news about the Nexus tablet is that there is rumor that there will be a $99 tablet released in time for the holidays, and that seems smart. It seems like a good gift choice,
I think it's scary, really.
Yeah.
I mean, what can they possibly put in this $99 tablet? I mean, even if they break even, which we're doing with the Nexus 7.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to, they're going to have to cut back on everything, basically.
It's absolutely. That's true.
I just don't know how it's going to run.
Yeah.
There's been some talk, too, and rightfully so, about, would Google really want to do a $99 tablet? Is it going to, you really got to watch out for the brand. Because if you release a cheap piece of crap, essentially, then people are going to see that and they're going to, ooh, Android. Oh, I don't like this. And you really got to watch out. And Google knows this. I mean, they're going to be at least somewhat careful, I think.
That's true. I know some people, including JJ, you got an Archos tablet, and the hardware just wasn't very good. And so it gave a negative impression of the Android.
Yep. And that was a lot of that was their fault. But yes, it was definitely on the lower. And that, of course, that was a $250 tablet.
Oh, that's
so we
cheap.
Were already surprised once with the Nexus 7. That was already the first price point that was broke that really kind of surprised people. And look how well that's done in sales. Maybe if Google's more looking for penetration at this point as opposed to, making lots of money, than maybe this $99 thing. You know, obviously they're going after the Kindle people, and it's anyway. It's good to see the Android to tablet market share has definitely gone up. It's not, iPad is no longer completely king like it was a couple years ago. Now that some of the others have caught up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. And at $100, a student can buy this. The college students don't have a lot of money to spare, but they like the gadgets. And tablets are really nice. I teach, and so it's nice to be able to tell my students in class, look this up and then practice citing it or something like that. So it's actually pretty useful, and they all have it. And not everyone can afford the iPad, so this is a nice alternative.
What about this new word then, phablet? This is. Have you heard this new word?
No, I have not.
Phablet. It's a tablet phone. This is like the Galaxy Note and the Note 2. They are now called phablets, apparently.
Wow.
That sounds too.
sounds
like
some sort
of thing I'd buy like at a handbag store.
Yeah.
I have a few friends that would buy a lot of phablets.
To match my shoes.
They're going to get to the point where they have like a whole closet full and they have to decide which one they want to take out on which day. And like, oh, this one matches my outfit today. So,
God. I can see that ending up, you know, that people, instead of buying a tablet, are going to buy it like a, you know, because the Note 2, which is due out if it's not out already, is like nearly 7-inch, isn't it? So,
And also quite popular. I mean, yeah. You know, these Galaxy Notes have done also, you know, all sorts of sales records, and they're doing really well.
Yeah.
You know, some of this, I would say the underwhelmingness, if that's a word, it is now, of the iPhone 5 and what it really didn't offer other than LTE and a broken Maps app, they kind of left the door open a little bit. I mean, you definitely see a lot of more penetration with the all the various tablet options, new phone options, and this next year is going to be really interesting to watch how things develop. There's going to be, you know, a really interesting shift, I think, in market share. You know, obviously, you're still going to have plenty of Apple people, but it's going to be interesting to watch the next 12 months.
And I think that applies to our community as well for the first time, because a lot of new people I notice on the Eyes Free list are coming over to Jelly Bean, and they're surprised at how well it works. And they're not as whiny and complainy about the Android-Apple comparison. So I'm wondering how many people are going to, blind and visually impaired people, are going to try Android and use that.
Yeah.
Well, in other Android news, Google Play, it sounds like, is going to be including a virus scanner.
This is good. I mean, you know, it's a lot of it's about perception, regardless of how well it really works, honestly.
Definitely.
You really could run a program for 5 seconds, say, scanning for viruses, and have it just sit there for 5 seconds, and it would probably still make people feel better than
nothing. Exactly.
You know, a lot of it is perception. But, you know, it's good that they're taking a lot more steps towards security. There actually is a lot of enterprise stuff that's coming, or perhaps in Android 4.2. If you look at some of the teardowns, there's a lot of that going on for enterprise, some stuff from the National Security Administration. So there's a lot of potential improvements here. And yeah, it's about time. You know, it is an open marketplace. We want to keep that. But it also needs to be, at least to the point, make us feel like things that we're downloading are safe, especially when you're downloading from developers that we haven't heard of before.
And in a related story that also is about downloading apps, there's an article that we'll include in the show notes about how, as phones have greater capacity to handle things, apps are fattening up. They're including more digital effects, which means more data to download, which means you know, running through your data limits in a lot shorter time than before.
Fair usage granted, but I wish data limits would just go away.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's just a cash cow, isn't it, really?
It's just like charging 20 cents for text messages.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, phone bills are not cheap. I pay a lot of money every month for my phone bill, for my cell phone bill and my data. And I think, you know, Verizon executives have big houses because of me. And I think I should do whatever I want with my data.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I'm fortunate in the UK here. I've got unlimited data. There is a fair usage, you know, thing that you have to read and stuff. But I've never been capped yet, and I've got, you know, it's good.
And that being said, we do have carriers here in the U.S. where you can get unlimited data, and you know, it seems like here the choice is you either have a good network or you have good data.
Yes, right.
Definitely.
The ones that have the best network are the ones that are also metering data. Hey, at least we don't have to worry about you know, paying extra or not being able to use certain features, FaceTime, and
yes,
you know, for example, and there's that. And yeah. I see someone has already sued AT&T for that. So there you go. We knew that was coming. Some more stuff on the show notes. This is a sore spot for me and for our producer Joe over there. Motorola rumblings, newer phones that aren't getting updates. The Droid 4 is likely an included party in this, which was a phone which was just released in February. Just the whole Google's buying Motorola, that's going to fix everything. No, it's really are not controlling them the way that they should be, which is,
I really think it's extremely bad for a phone that's been released this year not to get Jelly Bean. That just makes no sense to me. And that just,
here's a question here. We've still not seen officially, and there was discussion about whether Google was supporting this or not. Have we seen officially a Jelly Bean phone with a QWERTY?
No.
No, there's supposed to be one, right? That's going to come out, right?
But this really seems scarce on that, and it seemed there were some rumors of it. That was a holdup for some of the phones, but I'm, you know, not entirely sure.
Yeah.
I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I miss the QWERTY. I mean, I'm finally used to working with the on-screen keyboard, and that's going a lot better for me. But I really miss the QWERTY.
I don't miss QWERTY too much anymore. I'm just so used to doing the on-screen stuff. But you know, I can see that there's going to come a day when you don't get QWERTY phones, to be honest.
Yep. You know, and that's the thing. I guess I'll get used to it when I have to. I know at first I'm going to kick one of those Bluetooth keyboards and pair it with my phone.
Yeah.
That'll be the first thing I do. But, you know, as much as I text, you can't text as fast.
Yeah.
No, you can't.
No, I mean, no. So, I mean, that was one of the big reasons I went Android over the iPhone. And I know it's not just mine people that want keyboards. There is a segment of the market that likes their keyboards.
Yeah, so I read that
on
mainstream. I can't
see it completely being phased out.
Definitely, yeah.
Well, it looks like it is. I mean, you know, Nokia used to do hundreds of, you know, E5, E6, E7 for Symbian, and now they do hardly any at all. So something's telling them something, isn't it? You know, why are they phasing out the keyboards?
Well, it's too bad. I mean, there is a segment that really,
but it must be a small segment, I would imagine. You know, probably not a marketable segment.
They're trying to push everyone away from them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but what are they going to do? I guess eventually, if there's no keyboard options, they figure you're going to have to buy something. And
yeah.
Long live Retech, eh?
Yeah. A couple of new apps. I haven't had a chance to play with them. Maybe you guys have. There's a new standalone calendar app. So basically, the calendar app in Jelly Bean, which you guys have, is now available for 4.0 and up. All right, on the Play Store.
The Jelly Bean one's just been updated today as well.
Today was the day it was updated, so I haven't had a chance to play with it. Yeah,
I haven't either. But it's now called Google.
It sounds
Calendar
like those features that like you've been able to do snooze notifications and things like that. So as long as that's accessible for you, then it should be fine in 4.0 as well. And that's all. That's on the Play Store now. Some more accessible related stuff though has been released, namely from the Ideal Group, who always seems to be having something new released. Some really good, some a little clunky. A voter information app. I know we're coming out really close to the election, so you know, hopefully you get to try this out before you go vote if you're in the U.S.
It sounds really good. I mean, it sounds like it gives you information about your nearest polling place, who your candidates are, and then information on, say, the different propositions that are up. And what you do is you type in your address so that it knows what district and so on you're in. And then it compiles the information in ebook format, which you can read on any EPUB reader. If you don't have one on your phone, it'll prompt you to install the EPUB reader developed by Ideal Group. I haven't tried that. I haven't tried either. This announcement just came out today, about an hour before we recorded. And so it sounds really exciting, and it sounds really useful because now I can exercise my important civic duty during the commercial breaks rather than, you know, setting time aside for it. I can find out.
the info comes from a Google API, which is publicly available to anybody. So that's where they're tapping the information from. So, you know, it's the information is as good as Google is providing. But so really, you know, some of it might depend on where you live, and but it is out there, and of course you could go online and get it at the same thing, but hey, it's always fun to have it on your phone.
Absolutely.
So what about the ideal EPUB reader? Anyone tried it? I haven't tried it because I really hear about it until today, I think.
Here's the thing, it's not bad. I already had Darwin Reader, which did a good job at a lot of this stuff. And there's also a couple others that do EPUBs. That we've gone from zero to several EPUB readers, which is a good thing. So, yeah, Moon Reader does some, Bleo does them. I mean, there's nothing that makes Ideal stand out that I have to have that one. But if you don't have one and you just want to quickly get it, then it's there for you.
Another one there,
I have not tried the Ideal Reader. But the notes sound really interesting. It says that you can take notes, either type them in or speak them in. And so that sounds like a really good feature that would make it worth trying. So my goal is to try it see how well that works.
There's also a new currency app. Was this necessary? I don't know. I guess the government paid for it. So there you go. There's our U.S. government at work. It's a new currency app, which does less than the other currency app that was already out.
I think the advantage to the Ideal Reader is that it does the money recognition offline, so you don't need a data connection. I think that's the difference.
I thought Darwin did too, though.
Yeah, Darwin does. It? Yeah.
Oh, yep. It does. Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it does. And it reads UK currency, which Ideal doesn't.
Yeah. Right, and Canadian.
And speaking of the Darwin money identifier, it's gone open source recently, and so though it supports a number of currencies, people in the community can contribute code so that it recognizes even more currencies. That's nice.
You know, it'd be interesting. Any of the programmers listening, and we have a couple, so I wonder what that could be done since that code is out there now as far as other object recognition and things like that. Are there other applications that could be done? It'd be some interesting code to look at if you were a programmer, just kind of see what they did and what you might be able to do with that. Money counting. I want to add a mode so we can read Monopoly money. Come on now. I never tried that, the print Monopoly money, like with Google Goggles to see if it works.
I'll bet it would.
If you are, those of you listening, how about one of you try that out? Create some print Monopoly money, run it with Google Goggles, and give us an eye report and let us know if that worked for you. We'll be expecting something on the next episode.
Probably Margarita's done it.
Speaking of Google Goggles, technology is a beautiful thing. The other day I was at a bookstore with a friend of mine, and we were, browsing the books. And then she had to go to the ladies' room in a hurry. And so I'm standing there in the aisle, and it occurred to me I could use Google Goggles to browse. And I did, and it was such a liberating experience. It was really great. I was, the store employees thought I was weird, but I was checking out the books, and then I would, find out what the book was about by, clicking on the results link and everything. It burned the hell out of my battery, but it was great.
That would be a really cool podcast to hear someone in a store doing that.
Well, I've gone to the point with goggles where I can read barcodes quite successfully now.
Oh, wow.
Do you do it with the goggles app or do you use
just the goggles app?
Okay. And it does I get it to read logos and things. Now, do you guys do the continuous mode or do you do the...
I do the continuous and I'll just move it around the tin or the package.
So when you do continuous mode, so the continuous mode will keep looking several times
just
a second.
Just keep taking a picture every second or so.
So when you hear it say something, how do you get it to stop?
It just stops. Once it gets result, it'll stop.
Well, when I was doing that, when I was browsing books at the store, I found that I got much better results in continuous mode. But once it gave me a result, I had to hit back and then do it again. But if I'm going to use Google Goggles to do OCR, and it does really basic OCR. So if I have mail, I can figure out where the envelope's from, that kind of thing. So for that, it's better to use the snapshot.
Hmm. Right. Yeah, it does a reasonable job reading business cards and things like that for just little small things. It's just one of those apps that kind of sometimes falls under the radar, but it really is, you know, it's come quite far from
It's pretty good.
The first version, which we could barely use, and we were all frustrated about it.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite apps. And if it didn't eat up the battery so much, I would be like Google Goggles.
That's always a challenge with mobile phones. And, and move everything to our phones, but then, you know, what do you do with your battery? So sometimes it's good to have those dedicated things, you know?
Yeah.
Mm. I still use my iBill sometimes just because it's simple and it works. Finally, in the news this month, there's a lot of Android versus Apple reviews, comparisons. I'm frankly a little sick of them. I'm not sure about you guys. Why don't you just, you know, just take the iPhone 5 and a Samsung Galaxy S3 and put them in a blender and see if they really will blend. You know, is there some commonality there? There's a website that's actually done that. I definitely have to go look at that video. That's in the show notes. So. Go check that out.
That is a scientific mind at work, baby.
You know, I wish I had the money just to like throw at phones and just buy an iPhone and S3. And, you know, if I had that much money, I still wouldn't do that. On that note, let's go to an app review.
Google Translate is one of my favorite apps. When I'm reading a website or an email message with a word or phrase I don't understand, Google Translate is where I go for answers. While various versions have been more or less accessible over the years, the app has been quite usable on every version of Android I've ever had. I'm demonstrating it on a Jelly Bean device, but the app works just as well on a device running 2.2.2.
Translate. Drop edit box.
At the top of the screen are three controls. On the left is the drop-down list for the source language, the language you're translating from. On the right is a drop-down list for the target language, the language you're translating into. Between those two drop-down lists is a button to swap both languages. Below the drop-down lists are edit boxes. We can type or speak text into the source language box. So I'm going to type a word.
Choose languages above.
I'll be translating from English into Spanish, and you'll hear me run my finger over the source drop-down list, the swap button, and the target drop-down list.
Drop-down list, English. Swap source and target language button. Drop-down list, Spanish.
Now I'm going to find the edit box and type.
Enter text below. Edit box, English. Click, space deleted. X, C, C, A, K, K, T, T, car. Return, cat.
Now we're going to find the results.
Translate, drop down list, swap source and drop down list, dictionary noun, 1, gato, 2, gata, 3, felino, abbreviation, 1, tau, 2, Traducina assistida por ordenador.
It gave me the common words for male and female cat. It gave me a synonym, feline, and it gave me two other more technical uses. I'm going to explore the screen and you'll notice that I find a speaker button. This speaks the word to me.
Dictionary noun, English. Star button. Speaker button. Cat. Speaker button. Cat. Spanish. Speaker button, gato. Speaker button, gato.
Normally when I press the speaker button, I hear both my screen reader and the voice of Google Translate speaking at the same time. So to keep that from happening, I need to press the speaker button, then wave my hand over the proximity sensor right away. I'm going to use the same technique when I use the microphone button to input text. But first, I need to clear the existing search string.
Clear input button. Clicked. Enter text below. Edit box, English. Microphone button. Image 44.
What's for dinner?
Edit box, 44, what's for dinner?
The other option is to turn the screen reader volume way down. But if I do that, you won't be able to hear this demonstration, so I'm just waving my hand over the proximity sensor. Let's find our translation.
English. Start button. Speaker button. 44 watts for dinner. Spanish. Speaker button. 44 Quahe Para Center.
So my screen reader is pronouncing this as if it were English, but for a clearer Spanish pronunciation, I touch the speaker button.
Speaker button.
44. ¿Qué hay para cenar?
Now I'm going to clear this search.
Clear input button. Clicked.
And I'm going to swap source and target language.
Enter text below. Clear input button. Disabled. Microphone button. Microphone button.
Feliz Navidad y próspero Año Nuevo.
Edit box. Feliz Navidad y próspero Año Nuevo.
I'm touching the area roughly under the English drop-down list, and this is where there is a speaker button.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Speaker button.
I can play the Spanish as well.
Speaker button. Click.
Feliz Navidad y próspero Año Nuevo.
There you go. Google Translate has a cool mode called conversation mode. And to use this, again, you need to turn the screen reader down or wave your hand over the proximity sensor. And what conversation mode does is allow you to choose two languages so that you can have a conversation with someone who doesn't speak your language. To access this option, we need to find Translate, a drop-down list near the top of the screen that says Translate.
Drop-down list, Spanish. Drop-down list, Translate. Translate.
Okay, and one of the options is conversation.
Translate. Conversation. History. Favorites. Conversation. Click Translate.
Near the bottom of the screen, we now have an English button and a Spanish button. Before speaking English into the phone, touch the English button. And before speaking Spanish into the phone, touch the Spanish button.
Tap to speak below. Español button.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
Edit box. Hola, ¿cómo estás? Hello, how are you?
On my particular device, Spanish is at the bottom left and English is at the bottom right. I touch the Spanish button before I speak Spanish. To hear what the phone recognized, I slide my finger above the Spanish button. And I slide across to the right edge of the screen to hear the English result. Before I can speak English, I need to touch back.
Back. Clicked. Translate.
Now I can touch my English button and continue.
English button.
I'm fine, how are you?
Edit box. I'm fine, how are you?
I'm going to touch the left side of the screen to hear the Spanish.
Estoy bien. Simo est.
I'm going to touch back.
Español button.
Bueno, creo que tengo una gripe tremenda.
Edit box. Hey, bueno, creo que tengo una gripe tremenda. Well, I think I have a terrible flu. Back. Clicked. English button.
That's too bad. You need some chicken soup.
Edit box. That's too bad. You need some chicken soup. Es una elstima que necesita un poco de sopa de palo. Back. Español button.
Eso no me sirve, soy vegetariana.
Edit box, eso no me sirve, soy vegetariana. That does not help me, I'm a vegetarian.
And so on. That's a short version of the things that Google Translate can do. The trickiest part is getting the device to listen to your voice and not the phone's. The two ways to accomplish this are to turn down the screen reader volume or to wave a hand over the proximity or light sensor. You have the same problem when asking the app to speak a result Again, you can remedy this problem by waving a hand over the proximity sensor. This is really a useful app.
Are you tired of browsing through thousands of sites just to find the news you want? What about recipes, shopping, radio stations? Wouldn't it be great if there was a single place where you could find all these things and a lot more? There is. Discover Samnet with the widest and most complete content ever assembled for the blind community. And speaking of community, you can use Samnet's voice chat, instant messaging, and users forums to communicate with family, friends, and others who share your interests. To learn more about Samnet, please visit www.serotech.com. That's www.serotech.com. Or call us toll-free at 866-202-0520. We're Serotech, the accessibility anywhere people.
Hey everyone, it's Joe Steinkamp here for an app review, but on my new Nexus 7. Yes, I finally have Jelly Bean. I'm not left out in the cold anymore. I had to go get the tablet that everybody loves in order to do that, and I'm not upset about that at all, because we'll talk more about the Nexus 7 over the coming episodes. But I wanted to focus on some of the apps that come on the Nexus 7 in Jelly Bean, and one of those is the News Reader, which is Google Currents. And I'm just going to grab my old Nexus here and show you that it is a really neat way of reading news on the go on your little 7-inch Nexus 7. So I'm going to grab my tablet here. I'm going to come down to my Google folder.
Folder, Google, double folder opened, 4x3. Currents. Folder closed.
So I've opened this up, and I now have my Google Currents. Visually, it is a picture up at the top that changes to represent whatever the top story is just being posted on the feeds that you're watching. And then icons right below it. We're talking about a white background with the icon sitting on top of it. So if you're low vision and you have some issues with glare, you might find that a little bright. But the cool thing is with TalkBack, you don't really have to look at the screen if you don't want to. So I'm going to just kind of swipe across here.
Forbes. The Daily Beast. Fast Company. Saver Magazine. Good Light. Forbes. The Daily Fast Company. Saver Magazine. 500p. And Gadget. Add more.
So we can add more, but we'll come over here to Engadget for a second.
Engadget. Currents. Fetching latest.
So it actually goes over to the site, puts it in a very nice, easy-to-see presentation.
Classic latest New York Times releases Windows 8 app for all the news that's fit to tile 19 minutes ago. Classic latest New York Times mobile latest ASUS Padfone 2 review. 2x is a charm for this phone and tablet combo. 43 HD latest Warner Bros. To ditch 28-day release delay for rental stores. 2 hours ago HD latest 19 minutes ago visualized. Nikon Small World Microscope Photography Contest winners alt.
So I'm going to tap on that.
Visualized. Nikon Small World Microscope Photography Contest winners Donald Melanson 1 hour ago 3D render. The latest submission to DeviantArt. No, that's a microscopic photo of the blood-brain barrier in a live zebrafish embryo taken by Drive. Jet. NaNoWriMo Progress Meter uses Arduino to fight writer's DARPA's pet proto robot climb. NaNoWriMo Progress Meter uses
so
Arduino
I can get
to
those
fight
files.
Writer's block. Back.
I'm going to go back.
Back. Currents.
Let's
Good
add
light.
One. How about...
Add more. Currents. List showing 13 items. Showing items 1 to 13 of 13. Featured. Recommended. News. Business. Design. Entertainment. Lifestyle. Science and tech.
Let's go there.
And gadget 697 in library button. Navigate up. Science and tech. More options button. List showing 6 items. Spacecom 220 add for free button. Solve for X 42,000 add for free button. Redwrite Web 99,818 subscribers web technology, so add for free button. Android Central 731,226 subscribers your no, one source for Android news, review, add for free button.
Let's do that one. So I chose to add Android here.
Android Central 700, List, CNET 700, Android Central 700, Android Central 731,226 subscribers. You're no one source for Android news, reviews, apps, opinions, and pod in library button.
So it already tells me that I have it in the library, which is kind of cool. So we can go back.
Back. List showing 13 items. Back. Currents, Good Light, and Gadget. Android Central.
So there it is, which is really, really easy to do and very iconic base, easy to find with TalkBack. There are some options here. So let's come over here to...
Wi-Fi signal full, battery 85%, two, add additions. More options button. Add additions. Library drop down list. List showing two items. Showing items 1 to 2. Library. Trend. Library. Trending.
And so we could see what's trending.
Library. Trending. Three stocks to ride the massive aging of baby boomers. Forbes 17 minutes ago.
So that's what's trending off the first story.
Powell endorses Obama for second term. Daily Nation, Daily Beast, and more. Back.
So that's the ability to see what's trending, to see what's in your library. We do have some other options.
More options button. List showing 5 items. Showing items 1 to 5. Search articles. Manage library. Sync now. Settings. Lit help. Settings.
We'll go into
list
settings.
Showing 8 items. Google account ranger.1130. Translation when available. Show option to translate to English. Offline reading. Include images, none. Background sync. Enable background sync checkbox, checked. Download over Wi-Fi only checkbox, checked. Only if charging checkbox, not checked.
So those are my options, and I can go in there and make changes so I could actually download some articles, read them on a plane, especially if I don't have Wi-Fi or something like that. So kind of what Instapaper sort of does, or what you can do in the Chrome browser and other things now to be able to read things offline. It is a really easy to use app. It's very simple. It's very quick to be able to follow a lot of your mostly read situations. You can add feeds as well. So if you didn't find the feed that you were looking for here, you can always add one, which allows you to put that into a lot of these other feeds and get what you want every day when you wake up. You know, between this and Google Now, which is also a part of Jelly Bean, you have a lot of things that allows you to have information at your fingertips. And with the new TalkBack, that isn't making any small puns indeed. So, for that Android show, I'm Joe Steinkamp. We took a look at currents on the Nexus 7.
One of the areas where mobile phones really excel is in navigation and GPS. And as a blind person, I really appreciate this. Especially when it comes to public transportation. There are a lot of different bus and train and commuter rail services around the country. And sometimes it can be a little confusing to navigate these, especially if you've never been to a particular city before. But a lot of apps are filling this gap and making it quite useful and easy to navigate around cities I may have never been to before. I'll give you one example. Ride Metra, M-E-T-R-A, is an app for the commuter rail service in the Chicago area. It's by Jarrell Martez, and of course it's on the Play Store. We'll link to it in the show notes. So, there are a lot of different train lines in the Chicago area, and the Ride Metra app will allow me to get schedules for any of them. Not only this, it will actually let me do this without a data connection. This is quite useful for train stations, which often don't have the greatest of cell phone reception. So you don't have to worry about having a data connection to get the schedule for your nearby trains. If you do have a data connection, however, you can do even more. You can get rider alerts. In fact, they can be pushed to your phone. So if there is a delay on your particular route, it will be pushed straight to your phone and end up in your notification area. You can also use the GPS to find the most nearby stations to your current location. So if you're not exactly sure what is the clearest or what is the nearest metro station, the app can tell you that as well. You can set routes as your favorite. So if you set a particular line, say you go to work every day in a certain train line, you can set that one as your favorite and have just those alerts pushed to you and have that information be ready for you whenever you open the app. There are several tabs on the app, one that shows me the nearest stations, one that will deal with my favorite routes. I'm on the list of Metra routes.
Metra Electric, me. Milwaukee North MDN.
And I'm using the down arrow to go through
Milwaukee
these.
Milwaukee West MD. Rock Island, Rhode Island. Southwest Service SWS.
And let's say I want to get, 5 to 9 of 11. Get the schedule for one of these.
Union Pacific North, up N.
All right, that sounds good.
Departure station, Kenosha.
So now you choose your departure station.
Winthrop Harbor, Zion, Waukegan, North Chicago.
All right, I happen to be near Waukegan, we'll suppose, so I'm going to select that.
Destination station, Kenosha.
And destination station, I want to go all the way to downtown Chicago, so I'm holding down the down arrow. And there's Ogilvie Transportation Center, which is right near downtown Chicago.
Schedules. 4:10 p.m. minus 5:33 p.m. 348. 83 minutes. 22 stops. Showing items 19 to 22 of 27.
So notice how intuitive that is. Not only did it bring up the schedule for the line, it actually highlighted the next available train. So 4:10 p.m. is the next one I could take. It tells you when it departs, when it arrives, the train number, and the number of minutes for that trip. Now suppose I'm not going to be able to make that train. I can hit down arrow.
5:10 p.m. minus 6:29 p.m. 352. 79 minutes. 23 stops.
Tells you how many minutes. Tells you how many stops.
6:12 p.m. minus 7:30 p.m. 356. 78 minutes. 23 stops. 7:10 p.m. minus 8:25 p.m. 358. 75 minutes. 23 stops. 8:10 p.m. minus 9:00 p.m.
And there you go.
360. 75 minutes. 22 stops. Showing items 20 to 24 of 27.
And even by telling how many items are on the list, you can kind of have an idea of how many trains a day run on that particular line. So again, this is Ride Metro. There are many other apps like this, depending on where you are in the country. And even if you do inner-city transportation, I got the Megabus app, which is for inner-city bus service in the Midwest, South, Southeast, Northeast. And that app is also quite accessible. The Amtrak app was recently released, and that's one that you can use for passenger rail across the country. There's quite a few of these out there, so... go ahead and if you're in a city with public transit or if you happen to be traveling to one, go ahead and try some of these out. Each city has several, and you should at least be able to find one that's accessible no matter where you're going. For that Android Show, I'm JJ Meadow.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
Okay, here goes. I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than I do about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like PB&J, pigs in a blanket. Oh, and fish sticks. They do love fish sticks. Fillets I get, but sticks? What part of the fish does the stick come from? I know I can read a cookbook that'll tell me how to make a red wine reduction, but where are the cookbooks that can teach me how to cut the crusts off bologna sandwiches? Oh, maybe we can compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with brie? Everybody likes brie, right?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to push your food around their plate. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
It's now time for the That Android Show mailbag. If you want to send us something, you can send it to resources@serotalk.com. You can leave us an iReport through iBlink Radio, which of course is available on the Play Store. ThatAndroidShow.com, ThatAndroidShow on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you, your voicemails, your emails, whatever you want to send to us. We definitely appreciate it. Let's start out with a question about the Droid 4.
Hey, everybody. My name is Brandon. I just got my Droid 4. It's great. I want to thank you guys for the podcast you've done at That Android Show. I'm doing pretty good with iAndroid. I just got a few questions. Is there an easier way to dial than just finding numbers and hitting enter or select on them? Because when I use the keyboard, it doesn't always work for me. That's all for now.
So for me personally, and there might be another better way to do this, there are the numbers laid out in the grid, as you mentioned, and you could explore by touch or use the keyboard to get to them. If you arrow down to the add to contact button and then up arrow once, there's the actual edit box for entering numbers. So you can be sure to backspace and clear out whatever's there. And then you can type in numbers on the keyboard and it will work. It's a little clumsier than perhaps it should be. Of course, you could also get the eyes-free dialer and go that route as well, or get another alternate phone dialer. But that's the way that I found to do most of your dialing with the Droid 4. All right, let's go to a message from Dan.
Hi, this is for That Android Show. My name is Dan. I am one of the users who is using the Samsung Galaxy S3. I guess what I like about Android is the flexibility. Another thing about this S3, the large screen actually is really comfortable to type with. Some may disagree, but it is. And I find your show very helpful. I like the app reviews and JJ Madoff and the rest of the team. Access Dana, a wonderful day and great work. And good morning to you. All right, bye.
All right, thanks, Dan. We appreciate your message. Don't forget Steve. Steve's here, too. We like all of us here. And
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah. I haven't said a lot this month, but I'm here.
He's a noob. So, I mean, not anymore, though. I mean, he's been around for a few months. So, you know.
Yeah, I'm still around.
Kind of past that. But, yeah, no, definitely thank you for your...
Perhaps I'm outside the U.S. That's the problem.
Yeah, that might have been it. I had to speak louder and more clearly.
Yes.
Let's go to Mike.
Hey, Android Show, folks. This is Mike Reiser here. Just wanted to say I really enjoy your podcast. Really enjoyed the last episode. Just curious. I don't totally understand why Google is so concerned about security when it comes to toggling TalkBack on and off. I don't see how that could be a security risk or any of that stuff. And I also don't understand why, with these Android updates, why they don't just make it to where if you're on Wi-Fi, you just get them directly from Google no matter what phone you have. Or they could maybe have a download hosted somewhere and say, okay, if you're advanced enough to install this, click here. And, you know, you could install it that way. But anyways, keep up the great work. I'm probably going to be switching to a Galaxy Nexus from an iPhone in the next few months, so we'll see how that goes. Can't wait for the next podcast. Talk to you guys later.
Thanks for the question. I think what happens is that people who don't know what a screen reader is don't understand what it is. And if you read mainstream Android forums, there's a lot of panicky email that says something like, well, I installed TalkBack or I activated it to see what it does. And then when I tried to uninstall it, it wouldn't uninstall. Or when I tried to run it, it said that it has access to everything, including my credit card. Big Brother is watching. Oh, my gosh. So I think there's this perception that this is a big, creepy app that will pose many security
like you said,
problems.
Big Brother's watching you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think it's not really a security risk, but a perceived security risk. And I think that's why Google,
you know what might
be
good, and I see some apps that do this on the Play Store. They explain in the description why they are requesting specific permissions.
Yes.
So it might be interesting if the TalkBack people were to add that, you know, and say, hey, this is why we need the keyboard. This is why we need access to the entire screen and all the key presses and all that stuff. You know, people might understand a little better what's going on.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you could do a lot of malicious things with all the info that TalkBack gets. You know, we trust that they aren't. I mean, it is open source, so I mean, I think someone would notice, or I'd hope. But, you know, a lot could be done.
Yeah. It's not open source, though, is it? TalkBack?
Well, the source is out there.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh. Yes, it's up on the Eyes-Free site.
Yeah. Not always updated to the latest version, but it's there.
Yeah.
And as far as downloading, just downloading updates from Google, ask the carriers why that doesn't happen. I mean, there's obviously, you know, the carriers want to do it their way. And as long as they're bringing in the money, and especially as long as they're subsidizing handsets, there's that. So reference earlier note about the possibility of more Nexus phones coming out for those people who don't want to deal with carriers meddling in their affairs. There's the option. You know, you have the option. You can either pay for your phone up front or you can not.
Absolutely. And I always pay for my phone up front, and I have a Nexus and I'm quite happy with it. But also I have the GS3 now, and I like that phone too, I have to say. I think Samsung have done quite a good job on that.
Problem you run into in the U.S. sometimes, though, is even if you buy your phone up front, you don't save it all on the monthly. So, some carriers are better than others at this. It seems like if you buy your phone unsubsidized, then you should get a lower monthly rate.
So do you not have SIM-only contracts?
No. Depends on the carrier. There's no law requirement or that says if you bring your own device, then you get a cheaper plan. There's nothing that says that. You know, so T-Mobile used to do it that way. They used to have no contract versus subsidized plans, and I know they phased some of that out. You know, I would just assume if you're going to get a phone, I would, add $10 to the bill. Yes, now I'm encouraging them to add more to your bill, but, break it up over 2 years.
Yeah.
$10 a month or $12 a month, whatever it has to be, and be done with it.
Right.
But you want your subsidized cheap phones, that's what you get. You're kind of at the whim of what the carriers want.
Okay, we also have some email. The first message is from Chris. He uses Hotmail, and he's been looking for a Hotmail app. He says that the official one doesn't really work because when he tries to read the actual text of the message, it's not accessible. And he's having the same problem with Documents to Go. I haven't tried Documents to Go in a few months, but the last time I tried it, it was not accessible. So that's my guess.
Right, and you're using documents to go to read like Word files and things like that, I believe, right?
Exactly.
There was one, right. What was it called? There was like LC Word or something like that. That did
oh,
some
yeah, was it CL Word?
LC or
CL, CL Word, yeah. Word, something CL like Word? That.
There you go, Joe. Find that one. Some program that read it did like DLCX files and things like that, and it put them in a buffer. That might solve that problem. It looks like you found because you sent us a follow up email as far as Hotmail, and you found one solution. As far
yes,
as Hotmail.
It's called Handy Hotmail. He says it only supports one account at a time, and it's not very feature packed. But I mean, if that's the way you want to go, you can do that. And of course, the regular email app works. I get email from other sources on that, and you
right
when you. When you touch the message area, it appears to be blank, but you flick. If you're using Jelly Bean, you just flick your finger either to the right or down to read through the message. If you're using Ice Cream Sandwich and earlier, you would put the eyes free keyboard in navigation mode and flick that way.
I'm gonna give a plug for Aquamail because I reckon it's better than all of them. You just touch the message, so you're in the message list, and it gives you a preview pane. So you get most, usually all of an email in preview. You don't even have to open the message. But if you do, it's just web content, which doesn't often crash. It does occasionally. But if you're under Ice Cream or Jelly Bean, then Aquamail, I think, is a great app.
Yeah, and to jump on Steve's point, yes, you do have at least POP3 access for Hotmail. I'm not sure if you have IMAP. It might depend on your plan. So that means you're not limited to Hotmail's. You don't have to search for a Hotmail reader. So, you know, Aquamail, K9, whatever, you could use just fine. And that would, you know, generally you're going to get more out of a regular email client anyway than you are. I say you just forward your mail to Gmail and be done with it. But, you know, if you insist, you know, happy to try to help you out.
I use Aquamail for Gmail. I think it's better than the Gmail app, actually. Just turn off sync in Gmail and use Aquamail.
He also mentions an app called PDF to Speech. It says it does what it's supposed to do. So if you're looking to read some PDF files, it could use maybe a couple of dedicated keys. And
That's a little buggy, though. The good thing is that the developer is very receptive to feedback. We've been exchanging emails. I suspect other people have, too, and it is coming along, but it's still a little buggy. I can get it to start reading, but getting it to stop is sometimes a challenge. And I can get it to skip to the next block of text, but I can't always get it to start where I want it to and so on. So it's actually very promising, and I have the feeling that it'll be a great app soon, accessibility-wise. But right now it's still bits and pieces to work out.
Eugene sends us a couple recommendations for apps. Thank you, Eugene. One called Videos, which is if you have videos on a website, you can't get them to play, I guess, with your current web browser, or you want just a dedicated app to do that. It's just, it basically puts them in a list, and you can use it to do that. I haven't played with it myself, but sounds like it could be an interesting thing to play with. AndroZip, another file manager. There are quite a few accessible file managers out there.
Yeah.
So here's another one. Good keyboard access, you know, it sounds like it's all the buttons are marked on it as well, and you can you know, use it to also archive files as well. So that's AndroZip. We'll put that in the show notes.
And the developer is AgileSoft, and for videos, it's Android Code Monkey. That's how you find it in the Play Store.
There you go. And also a shout out to Marco Z's accessibility blog and of an app or an article about making apps accessible. And we'll thanks for sending that along. We'll put that one in the show notes, the ever growing show notes.
And as Marco Z points out, I mean, making an app accessible is about more than labeling buttons. But for the end user, this is usually the most obvious problem. So making an app accessible is complicated, but when we report bugs to developers or we report problems to developers, we can only report what we know if we don't have
to be honest, though, Anna, I mean, making apps accessible. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine who developed Repeater, which is an app for amateur radio, you know, to find the nearest repeater. And he said that making apps accessible is simply following Google's guidelines.
Yes.
And that's all it is. Yeah.
But, you know, I just think some developers, some people in general just don't want to do the most obvious thing. You know, they want to get creative. And
you're right. It's the same thing, though. If you follow the Android design guidelines and you do things correctly, then you're generally going to be in good shape. It's just like developing Windows apps.
Yes.
You know? If you use standard Windows controls and you have a menu and you have hotkeys and all that stuff, it's going to work.
Yeah.
You just never know. I mean, there's always going to be little hang-ups here and there, and it's probably good to have someone look at your app to see if it's accessible or not. But you're generally on. You're headed down the right path. Now, here's you notice the Windows 8 App Store, they're having this accessibility checkbox, and that's already bringing up some interesting debate. So you have an accessibility checkbox for your app. It's like, ooh, that might be a really cool idea, except anyone can check the checkbox.
Yeah.
You know, you can upload an app, and you can say, yeah, is this app accessible? Click, check, yeah. Except already people are starting, you know, a lot of the ones that are checked are not really accessible, and, you know, so be careful what you wish for, I guess is what I'm saying. For people who have kind of been saying that might should be a component of an app store, you know, that could actually lead to more trouble than solving any problems.
Well, we've seen that as well on Apple Viz, you know, where people review apps that are zero accessible, that are not accessible, and they give you zero stars, and you think, well, why did they do that? You know, why bother to review an app if it's totally inaccessible? Why tell the blind world about it, who you're telling, and say, you know, don't buy this app, I installed it, but why put it in a, you know, on an accessibility blog?
The only thing I could see is that it saves someone else from paying for it.
Yeah, I suppose so.
We do at least have the 15-minute grace period.
Yeah.
So you could do a quick once-over of the UI.
What's this thing about Play Store going to have trials in app subscriptions or something like that, so you can try out apps?
I think it's another one of those API things up to the developer, like if they want to do magazine subscriptions in an app or things like that.
Yeah.
So kind of like what you can do now with Google Play magazines.
Yeah.
You know, it's another subscription model. There's been a lot of incremental improvements to the Play Store lately. So it's good to see them catching up. You can now buy a Play Store credit, which was something that was kind of long missing. That's something you can do. First, you could do it from the app. Now you could do it from the web as well. So you can clear out your apps list if you really want to clear out your apps list.
Very nice, yes.
You can do that now. There's a couple. They added support for Russian and Indian currency this week. So in case you were looking to, you know, sell your apps over there, then those areas are now covered, which is, you know, I guess. But, you know, there's lots of little things, but those little things do add up, and it will definitely be interesting to follow the progress. So we look forward to hearing from all of you. Let us know your apps, especially the ones, you know, we all know about K9 or about, you know, the Bookshare app or things like that. You know, what if you find some weird app that no one else is talking about and you're the first one to discover it, be sure to let us know, because, you know, we like hearing about different apps that, you know, there's thousands that are accessible for sure. It's just, you know, no one has time to install all of them. You know, you can, I mean, in a lot of those goofy things, I have a Quagmire soundboard now, so hey, I'm all set.
What?
Yeah.
A Quagmire soundboard.
That's all you need. What else do you need?
What else is there really?
Well, we hope you come back and join us again for episode 13, where we might throw the new Braille Plus 18 and a Braille speaker in a blender and see what happens. We have a lot of Android news coming out, so be sure to come back to us. And thank you so much for listening. I'm JJ Meadow from AndroidAccess.net.
I'm Access Anna from AccessibleAndroid.blogspot.com.
And I'm Steve the Blind Geek from Computer Room Services, www.comproom.co.uk, or blind_geek on Twitter.
That's going to do it for this month. Until next time, see you later.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Drawing.